Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. It's college move-in season around Boston, and that means streets like Huntington Ave and even Comm Ave right near our studios are clogged with minivans, their trunks ajar. But once all those futons and mini-fridges are unloaded, freshmen often have a much harder time unloading their parents. So-called helicopter parents are reluctant to say goodbye, reluctant to let go. So colleges are helping them make the break. We'll be talking about that later this hour. But first, if anybody is still moving in by Friday night or Saturday, things might get a little unpleasant. Forecasters say Hurricane Earl is likely to bring tropical storm winds and heavy rain to eastern Mass this weekend. And if the storm track swings a little to the left, well, things could get a lot more serious. Joining us now with the latest is WCVB-TV Channel 5 meteorologist Mike Wonkum. Hi, Mike.
Hey, great to be with you this afternoon.
Mike, Hurricane Earl was looking pretty scary a day or two ago. It was a Category 4 storm headed right in our direction. How powerful is it now?
It's down to a Category 3. Maximum sustained winds are at about 125 miles per hour. You know, usually when you see like a 4 or a 5, it kind of almost self-destructs itself. So you don't get too worried about it when it's several days away. They usually tend to kind of lose some of that punch. They just can't hold on to that strength for very long.
Most of the storm tracking systems show Earl veering east of New England and making landfall around Nova Scotia. Let's say that happens.
Okay,
will we still experience some hurricane effect here in Boston?
Yeah. Probably not so much in Boston. I think we'll get some like kind of a breezy rain is the way I would look at it. Really, it's more towards the Cape and Nantucket. That's where we would really see more wind and rain. This is a very tight little system, you see. It doesn't have like a big wind field. So if you're like out in Orange, you're going to go, what wind? There's no wind out of this thing. Even if it goes right over the top of Nantucket, you're going to go, what wind? It's just that tight of a little system. And that's probably one of the most difficult parts of forecasting this is the fact that it is such a small, small area that we're talking about.
Ah. So as you just said, according to the storm tracks, there's also a possibility that Earl could veer to the left and make landfall on the Cape.
Yeah.
What do you think are the odds of that? And if it did make landfall on the Cape, what would that mean?
Pretty slim right now. All the models are starting to come into agreement, so to speak. And the closest it's really getting to us is Nantucket. So I think the Cape is fine that way in terms of a direct hit. Nantucket, it's a little more of a tricky question there. Although I will say that just looking at the data right now, it does look like it will be east of there. If for some reason, let's just say we'll call it Hurricane Z, because we don't want to say Earl is going to do this. But if we had a Hurricane Z that, say, went through through Rhode Island or went through Connecticut, then we would really start to see the wind. You see, you have to remember with a hurricane, the right side has all the wind with it. The left side has all the rain of it. So even if you go back to like Hurricane Bob back in 1991, the Cape got a lot of wind from it, but they didn't get much rain. And then inland, we saw just flooding rains going on, but they didn't see much wind. So it really determines where that line is, where that fine line of where it wants to cut through at. But right now, everything seemed like it's going to be pushing off of Nantucket a bit.
Oh, that's really interesting. So no evacuations have been ordered yet in our region. But how do people on the Cape need to prepare? Because this is coming on a weekend, and we're still obviously in vacation season. I know someone who has a wedding near the Cape this weekend, and she's just terrified that her outdoor ceremony's a goner.
Now, what time is her wedding?
I think it's at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon.
You know what? She's going to have probably one of the most beautiful days you've ever seen.
Okay.
I'm serious. This whole thing is going to blast through so fast. It's not like a nor'easter that winds up for 3 days. This thing comes through, and it's really literally a few hours. That's about all the longer it lasts. So I would say by about 9 o'clock Saturday morning, this thing is all over with. We're not even going to be dealing with it.
All right. So as soon as I get off the air today, I'm going to call her and tell her her wedding is good to go.
You know what? It's a bride-to-be. Make her nervous. Oh, it looks awful.
Mike,
what
about rip currents? Is it safe to swim?
It's safe to swim if you know what you're doing and know where you're doing it at. The reason I say that is I was watching the surfers yesterday. They were all offshore having just a great time, but they're familiar with that. Lifeguards, you know, a lot of lifeguards are leaving the beaches now because they're headed back to college. So you need to be, you know, very aware of where you're at and where you're swimming and what the conditions are like. If you're not, don't go anything above your kneecap. You know, the rip currents that we talk about, we used to call them undertows. And what it is just the waves coming off of the storm, hitting the beach, and that energy from those waves has to get back out some way. And it usually finds it along a jetty. And it's just like a river just takes you right out. I mean, it doesn't matter how strong a swimmer you are. You can get caught in one of these things and just get sent right out to sea, like 100, 200 yards, Problem is people try to fight that, and when they fight it, they get exhausted, and that's where the problem comes
into. Sure, waves are powerful things for sure. So, Mike, before you go, tell us one more time, by what time on Saturday will this all be over?
I would say by 9, 10 o'clock in the morning is the way it's looking right now. Okay. I think what we're – just kind of give you a timeline on it. I think the rain's probably going to start arriving in here by late afternoon, maybe towards evening on Friday. And we'll get the strongest winds as the storm moves offshore. I think peak wind's probably about 2 a.m. in the morning, early Saturday morning. And then this whole thing blows out of here. If you sleep in late on Saturday and you're not right at the coast, you're going to go, what storm?
All right. So we're going to maybe we'll get our good weekend after all.
I think it's going to be a spectacular weekend. And I think, you know, it's a long weekend for a lot of people. So I would say don't cancel those plans at the Cape yet. It could be really nice.
Good news for everyone. Channel 5 meteorologist Mike Wonkum, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
The history of New England hurricanes is sparse but intense. The last storm of significance to hit us was Hurricane Bob back in 1991. It made landfall near New Bedford, and it killed 18 people. As we've heard, we don't know yet what Hurricane Earl is likely to do. But historically speaking, those few hurricanes that do make it up to New England tend to be particularly destructive. In this story from our archives, Radio Boston's Adam Ragusa explains why that is.
Up from the West Indies, cradle of hurricanes, moved the Terror, a pit of low atmospheric pressure into which the air rushed from all directions to form a whirling, shrieking vortex of high wind and heavy rain. Hurricane.
This is an old WPA documentary about the Great New England Hurricane of 1938. The narrator's copy may sound overly dramatic, but this was a very serious storm. In terms of damage, it was the sixth most expensive hurricane in U.S. history, and as many as 800 people died, mostly in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut.
The quiet dignity of colonial meeting houses was reduced to broken lumber. In one brief hour, part of the ancient beauty that was New England's heritage vanished forever.
The film's presentation style is clearly from another era, but there are plenty of old-timers around Boston who still remember what happened.
It was a different atmosphere. It was something strange about the air.
Jack Marr was 15 years old when the storm of 38 blew through his leafy suburb in Medford.
We didn't know what a hurricane was in those days. God's honest truth. I don't think I'd ever heard of a thing.
That's not surprising, considering at the time, the last major hurricane to have hit New England came just after the Civil War. Jack and his friends had no idea what they were stepping out into.
We walked up here, and the wind was blowing, and we were sort of leaning into it and joking and kidding. My sister was visiting with the O'Neills. They came out on the porch, and this big tree was just in the far end, and they no sooner got in that door when that tree came down and sliced it right, it almost brushed the front door.
While Jack's sister was narrowly averting death, the real action was just to the south in Milton, where the second highest wind gust ever recorded anywhere was whipping over the Blue Hill Observatory. Charles Orloff runs the place today.
The mast that you see here, with 11 different wind systems, all blew off this roof, the last one to record the 186 miles an hour just before the tower went down.
So for all you know, there could have been a higher peak wind speed in 38.
Could have been, yes. Yeah. You know, everything went at that point. We have been clearing a few trees around here. We have never found one that was older than 1938, so we know the top of the hill was completely taken down.
Last century, there were four Category 3 hurricanes. Category 3 is a major hurricane, and they all happened in a 16-year period, from 1938 to 1954.
This is Glenn Field, warning coordination meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Taunton. Basically, it's his job to keep us all a little worried.
There was the 38 hurricane, the 44, and then two of them in 54. Actually, Carol and Edna occurred within 12 days of each other. And we haven't had any in the past 55 years. We definitely are due.
Not only are we due, says Glenn, but when we get hit again, it's probably going to happen really, really quickly. Basically, there are two kinds of common hurricanes in the North Atlantic. There are the ones that form off the coast of Africa. They get huge, but they have to travel so far that we can know they're coming weeks in advance.
The second source region is the Bahamas. Now, those storms can be up here in no time, and so they kind of give us the willies. Hurricane Bob in 1991 was nothing more than a cluster of thunderstorms in the Bahamas on a Friday afternoon when all the emergency managers went back home for the weekend. But by Saturday, it was a Category 3 hurricane, and by Monday, it was in for breakfast and out for dinner here in New England.
Thanks for tuning in as we continue to update you on Hurricane Bob. Earlier, we just had a statement to Block Island, 125-mile-an-hour winds. When that came in, they also had some...
In late summer and fall, the jet stream has a tendency to dip dramatically down to the Gulf Coast and then shoot back up toward the northeast. It can grab one of those rapidly forming hurricanes from the Bahamas like Bob and send it rocketing up the eastern seaboard at highway speeds. That's compared to the jogging pace of hurricanes that typically hit the south.
The point at which southern New England needs to take action is when the storms are in the Bahamas. They can be up here in just a matter of 2 days or so.
Stop here and imagine the whole city trying to board up their windows and buy bottled water and flashlight batteries in the space of 48 hours.
And the point at which actions need to be complete is when the storm is at the latitude of North Carolina. Did you hear me? That means North Carolina is when you have to no longer be tying up your boat or anything like that.
In the case of the 1938 storm, it made it from North Carolina to New England in 8 hours flat, and its effects were felt well before then. Back at the Blue Hill Observatory, I asked Charles Orloff,
what do you think would happen if a similar hurricane came into the area today?
Well, I worry about the taller buildings, mainly in the Boston area that weren't here in 1938. We've seen what can happen in places down south with tall buildings, glass being blown out of those buildings. Certainly they're going to survive, but there could be tremendous damage done to these buildings.
And there's another thing that gets Charlie anxious. There are way more trees around here than there were in the 30s when Boston was surrounded by farmland. And in hurricane-force winds, trees become deadly projectiles. Of course, it's hard to know what the next big one will look like until it's on top of us. But while it might not happen soon, it'll probably happen fast.
That's Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea, who's here with me in the studio right now. Adam, does the hurricane of 1938 tell us anything about this week's Hurricane Earl?
Well, firstly, it's not the kind that gives guys like Glenn Field the willies, as he said. Earl formed off the coast of Africa, not around the Bahamas like the 38 hurricane did. So that's why we've already been given relatively ample notice. And that said, it is on its way north and the winds are slowing, but it's moving toward us faster and faster. And that's really the key to understanding why these New England hurricanes, when they have hit, historically have been pretty destructive.
Why have they been so destructive?
Well, here's what the scientist that I talked to for that story explained to me. These storms are always somewhat weakened by the time they get up here because the water up here is colder and that saps their energy, right? So Earl, as we've heard from Mike Wonkum, is already down to Category 3, you know, 125, 120 miles per hour rotational speed.
Okay, rotational speed being how fast a hurricane is spinning in a circle, you know, versus
right.
opposed to just how fast it's moving forward?
Exactly. So basically, usually when hurricanes hit New England, the whole storm is moving at you at 40, 50 miles per hour, a much faster velocity than they move down south. And when they do make landfall, the peak wind speeds that we experience are the rotational speed plus the speed at which the storm is moving.
So basically those two speeds get compounded, kind of like
right.
a really cold day. The temperatures plus the wind chills can make it feel way more cold than it actually is.
Exactly. So this is, we should be clear, this is a rare event, and especially from what we just heard from Mike, this is almost certainly not going to happen with Earl. But theoretically, if a 125-mile-per-hour hurricane hits you at 50 miles per hour, you'll experience wind speeds of 175 miles per hour. 125 rotational speed plus 50 miles per hour velocity equals 175 miles per hour winds, right? So that's how the hurricane of 1938 produced a gust of 186 miles per hour on the Great Blue Hill, even though that was just a Category 3 storm as well when it struck. So now one more thing we should say is that, as we said, we have no idea what Earl is going to do. But the point is, these things have the potential to be really serious up here in New England. And that's why all the emergency management people are urging everyone to be prepared.
So don't be scared, but be ready.
That's right.
Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea. Thanks for the science tutorial.
You bet.
Well, we've told you what meteorologists say about Hurricane Earl, and we've heard what history has to say. But what about that old stalwart, the Farmer's Almanac? The almost 200-year-old publication uses a secret formula of astronomical, tidal, and sunspot data to concoct full-year forecasts that it claims boast an 80 to 85% accuracy rate. The Almanac has just come out with its new predictions for this coming winter, and editor Peter Geiger joins us by phone from the Farmers Almanac headquarters in Lewiston, Maine. Welcome to Radio Boston, Peter.
Thank you very much.
We definitely want to hear about all your predictions for this coming winter, but first, does the Almanac tell us anything about Hurricane Earl?
Well, what we had predicted, and this was doing it 2 years ago, is we felt that there was going to be a hurricane that would hit New England on the 8th of September. So it looks to me like it's going to, maybe we're going to miss that by a couple of days.
So you actually had it pinpointed down to an exact date months ago.
Oh, yes, 2 years ago, actually. And that we did, as we did Katrina and the Rita, they both hit New Orleans. We said where it would hit and when, and I think in both cases we were off by 2 days. But, you know, weather it being what it is and hurricanes being what they are, sometimes you don't know when they exactly are going to strike.
Sure, still pretty impressive forecasting, especially done 2 years out. So let's move on to the winter outlook, even though winter can seem very far away on 90-degree days like we're having this week in Boston. I understand you're expecting an especially cold winter nationwide.
Well, we think that the western part of the country, the western third, is going to be mild. The middle part of the country is going to be cold and very snowy, particularly in the Great Lakes and Northern Plains. The eastern part of the country is going to be very cold. And in New England, we think bitter cold with average amount of snowfall. So that's still quite a bit of snow, and compared to I think what Boston got last year, certainly what Maine got last year, which was very, very little snowfall. It's going to be a cold slap in the face because it was not so cold last year, and the summer's just been atrociously hot, which we did call for, and now we think it'll be cold with average amount of snowfall.
Average amount of snowfall meaning we still could have a lot of shoveling to do.
Oh, sure. It would be plenty of shoveling. And then you're going to get a couple storms in December. And then if I look at the whole winter, I would look at the last 2 weeks of January and the first 2 weeks of February for the bigger storms. And then, quite frankly, March and April don't look very bad. And I always look at my winters looking at the end of the winter first to see when is it going to end, because I can always take 3 or 4 months, but that's it.
That's right, because usually by that point, February, March, you're starting to think, when will this be over? So to hear that that could be the mild segment sounds like good news.
Yes, exactly.
You know, as you probably know, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, says the Farmers' Almanac's methods are not scientifically valid. In fact, NOAA is calling for a warmer than normal winter in our region. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, it's interesting that they comment on us when we've been doing this almost 200 years, and I think with pretty good accuracy. So, I mean, they do their thing and we do our thing, and you know, if I was them, I probably wouldn't comment.
It sounds like you stand by your predictions.
Oh, absolutely.
Peter Geiger, editor of the Farmer's Almanac in Lewiston, Maine, the 2011 edition of which is in stores now. Thanks for coming on Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
When we come back, we'll continue to take on the elements. We'll look at what kind of job HUD is doing to protect subsidized housing tenants from the cold weather and high utility bills. And colleges try to ease separation anxiety between students and a generation of parents not known for letting go. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.